This is Papa Smurf. You're listening to Our Lifestyle, the podcast with ODB and the Mayor.
You're listening to Our Lifestyle, the podcast, brought to you by Custom Car Show Productions, which includes Orange Beach Invasion, Scraping the Coast, Sick Nick, and Slamber Party. Make sure you search on Facebook Scraping the Coast, Scraping the Coast Show on Instagram. Also, Sparkles Detail. Tell Tim and Tanya, ODB and the Mayor sent you.
We oh, baby!
Turn them over.
When it comes to being true, at least true to
That's
me.
Right. That's what I do. Come on.
One thing I found. One thing I found. Oh, no, you never let
no,
me down.
I ain't never let you down.
Get up, I get. Get up, I get. Get up, I get. Get up, I get. Yeah.
Yo, first I snatched the streets, then I snatched the charts. First I had their ear, now I
have their heart. Our Lifestyle, the podcast, brought to you by our friends over at Hammered Weekend Wear. Make sure you go to hammeredapparel.com and put in the notes OLP. You never know what you may get in that package you order. Also, All Time Low Magazine. Support the real deal Holyfield. ATLmagazine.com. Make sure you subscribe for the 2018 subscription. You're going to continue to see a great partnership between All Time Low Magazine and Our Lifestyle, the podcast. Make sure you tell Rich and Beth, OLP, ODB, and the Mayor sent you. We appreciate y'all. Enjoy. Yo, 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 it's Our Lifestyle, the podcast, episode 58, coming at you live and direct. We got the homie, Mike Schartzis, and Ruben on this episode. So this one's titled Mike Schartzis, and Mike, of course, was one of the original editors of Mini Truckin' Magazine, roughly 99 to 98-ish, or excuse me, 92 to 1998-ish. You'll get a chance to hear how Mike got involved with the magazine. I was always curious about that, kind of a little bit before my time in terms of the mini truck scene, but it's great to hear from one of the founders, and he was inducted into the Mini Truck Hall of Fame back in 2015 as a journalist. So real good dude, and what's awesome is we also have Ruben, who's one of his homies. He actually comes on, and we do kind of a full interview with both of them. So I think you're really going to enjoy it. For me, it was really a blast to get inside the mind of Mike and kind of understand, you know, his beginnings. And then, of course, you got Ruben there. They used to roll in the same clique, if you will. You know, they were homies back from high school, so if you think back to your high school days and how epic those were, you know, these guys growing up in Cali, they really had a good time. So you'll see the camaraderie there. Again, great interview. We hit upon many topics, including the homie Pat Nichols Ballistic. We had Pat on before. I just posted a photo. I got a new frame for the issue that Pat signed for me when I met him back in 2015. So real good dude. He just posted a comment on that photo and said, "Hey, I love the podcast." So, Pat, dude, keep doing what you're doing out there. You could find Pat on Instagram if you just look up Pat Nichol. It's just PatNichol. You also, towards the end of the interview, you definitely have to stick with it to the end with Mike and Ruben. We also, I kind of squeeze in a question there. I was pretty sure that Schartzis was there when they shot Ballistic for the cover of Mini Truckin' January 93 issue that ran. And sure enough, he was. He was one of the photographers there. And I always wanted to kind of know, like, whose house was that? And kind of, you know, a little bit of insight there. So it's real cool. Again, blast from the past. Take a trip down memory lane. And remember, we got to respect those that came before us. And someone like Mike and Ruben, those guys have been doing it a long time, and they're good people. So, again, you'll definitely enjoy that. Now, I'm going to intro this episode, and I want to mention All Time Low Magazine. We just did a flip-through of issue 11, which was the fall 2017 issue. We're going to continue doing these, not just with All Time Low Magazine, but we're definitely going to spend some time going through some of the issues to really show that you need to hit up ATLmagazine.com and click on the section to subscribe. It's $50, and that gives you approximately 4 issues they do per year. And those guys are on deadlines. They get shit done, and they produce a good product. Awesome quality pages. The print is awesome. They also have other gear that you can purchase there. But it's atlmagazine.com. You're going to see an ad in the upcoming issue for Our Lifestyle, the podcast. So definitely support those that are supporting OLP. Now, also, get a chance to sync up with Ron from Hammered Weekend Wear. We record a new short commercial, so you definitely don't want to sleep on the new gear that he has out now. And then also, word on the street is he's going to have a brand new product that's going to be dropping real soon. Now, right before I started recording this, I noticed that Ron posted up on Instagram at Hammered Weekend Wear, and he mentioned that this is no April Fool's joke. They're completely sold out on the Party Like It's 1999 shirt featuring Crew Cut. They've decided to bring back another pre-order until April 8th at midnight. So only during the pre-order can you get the talls, the charcoal, the pink, and the hoodies. They're also going to stock those in black. You save $5, and all tees are only $15, even 2X plus. So if you share the post, one lucky person will get their order doubled for free. So you want to go to hammeredweekendwear.com and go ahead and place that pre-order. Now, I already purchased the shirt, but I'll be purchasing a couple more because I love the different colors. And for $15, I can't even buy a nice shirt at Walmart for that cost. So definitely check out Hammered Weekend Wear. Now, we got some scene updates for you. Truck and Mag, I just got the new issue. What was funny is I was at Walmart looking for some cleaner or something I needed, and I stumbled upon, I was like, man, this new issue, I haven't even got the one in the mail yet. So sure enough, of course, they have a different truck on the cover for the subscription cover, and it was shot by the homie Grant Cox, and it's Elias's truck. It's a 2011 Silverado. And it's really badass. It's a crew cab truck, big billet wheels. It's black, and it really has a nice cover. So even if you pick up that issue on newsstands, you'll still, of course, see that feature. Now, Street Trucks, I didn't talk about this one, but I did want to make sure I shared. The latest issue has a truck built by Delmos, and it's titled Old Gold. It's a 59 GMC 100. And I forget if it's 6 or 8 page feature. Wow, what a feature on this truck. It really goes to show you that these old classic trucks are continuing to really blaze a trail. I believe I saw that one at SEMA the last time I went, I think. But I tell you what, it's truly a sick truck. Now, additionally, we recently saw a Crew Cut that was unveiled via the whole Gas Monkey filming. And that episode, I forget, I think I read it's a 2-hour episode that's coming soon. I haven't really kept up a lot with TV lately. However, I'll tell you, if you look at the hashtag Crew Cut, that's with 2 Ks, so K-R-E-W-K-U-T. First, you're going to see a lot of photos I posted over the past, you know, couple of years, including photos that I took at Showfest when Heather and her husband brought it out. So really good people. And then, of course, it changed hands. We all know that story. And now it's over with Gas Monkey. The one thing I'll tell you is I'm happy to see that it was really well received. A lot of people have given this truck a lot of love. I've seen a lot of the close-up photos. I'm really pleased with the outcome. It looks like Sean Mahaney's wife was out there with some of the folks that were in the wheelchairs that Sean Co. had built. So I'm real anxious to see what the tie-in's going to be there. But from the looks of it, it seems like they really did it right. You know, the truck, but also the whole Sean Mahaney piece. Obviously, if she was out there, and then the folks in the wheelchairs that were from Sean Co. So it sounds like Velocity and Gas Monkey, they really kind of handled this one with what I always say, with kit gloves, and they did it right. So That's always a great news story. I know sometimes people get bashed upon for different things, but we don't spend enough time to say, you know, tip the cat or kudos to someone or a shop or a TV show. Again, I don't want to, you know, spoil it, but many of you have seen those photos and I'm super stoked about it. Definitely want to try to get a tie-in on a future episode to talk about the reincarnation of Crew Cut. But with the new motor and the slosh tubs and the tweak, you know, the updated suspension, I know the homies over at Hydraulics, they were tied in as well. We were going to have them on recently, but we had to kind of push that back with the whole Lone Star and Crew Cut not making the debut there as some of us had intended. So more to come on that. Okay, next, I wanted to mention Kevin Whips. I saw this on Instagram, I believe it was, and if you go on Amazon and you type in Kevin Whips, W-H-I-P-P-S, he has a new book out, How to Restore Your Chevy Truck 73 to 87. It's only $29.95, and you know, Kevin's been doing this a long time. He wrote the feature on Bada Bing, and when you look at some of his history, he built... and you know, he owned the car that was called Bad Apple years and years and years ago. It's a sick, sick car. And like I said, Kevin's been around a long time. He's a good dude, and I wanted to kind of give him a shout out there. I know he was stoked to have a book published, and I just wanted to say, man, you know, keep doing what you're doing, Kevin. It's Kevin Whips on Instagram. Also, I wanted to say that although today is April 1st, Devious Customs has posted that it is their 18th year celebration. So if you look up Devious Customs with a C on Instagram, of course, we've had Jeff on before, and this is definitely no April Fool's joke. Jeff's been doing it a long time. He's got a great crew. He's always thanking them in posts. And they continue to put out top-notch builds. One of the recent Lincolns that the Devious crew built debuted at the Good Guys show in Pleasanton, Cali. It's a badass red vert. And if you go check out Devious Customs, you can check out those photos. The owner is Bubba, and it's M-C-G-U-I-R-E, McGuire. And you can check out those photos of the car. Now, when Jeff was on last time, he talked about machining parts and things like that. And if you go to Bubba's Instagram, you'll get a chance to see like the different machining work that they did for the dash pieces. The 66, 67 Lincolns, the dashes were different. So, you know, to see one that's really nice and customized with the amount of machining that they did on the CNC deal, this car's on point. So it's really, really, really nice. So big ups to Devious Customs. Also, the last scene update that I wanted to provide was yesterday I was moving Bada Bing around in my at-home shop, and I had posted a quick video. I don't post a lot on the truck. The truck's been done. May will mark 6 years, and this video had over 3,000 views. I do sometimes forget that a lot of people that I've met, and you know, with social media, how it's continued to blow up the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. It's great that other people that don't realize that I own that truck, or maybe they've never seen it, they get a chance to, you know, see the tremendous work that Jimmy's Rod and Customs put into it. So make sure you follow on Instagram. It's at Jimmy's Rod and Customs. He built the truck. Of course, Big Body Custom Interiors did the interior up in Tennessee. My homie Paul, who's one of my old school friends, he built the speaker box. And then, of course, Big Body's kind of built upon that, where the amp rack is at and whatnot. I'm definitely thankful for everyone that was involved, but I got to say thanks to Colorado Custom Wheels, also on Instagram, at CC Psycho Wheels. They reposted the video. They're always showing love, not just to me, but to any of their customers, including Eric, the homie, Mexican, in Tampa. They always, always, always show love, and they repost customer rides all the time. So it's a great company to be involved with. And Michael, if I remember correctly, they just hit 10,000 followers. They do Machining Monday. He's got some of the baddest posts in the scene. If you look at the emoji that he uses and the hashtags, he really, really, really does it up. But they're actually they're at 9,000. They just hit 9,000, and they're shooting for 10K. So keep doing your thing, Michael. And I just want to say, man, you guys are awesome there. Colorado Custom Wheels, a.k.a. CC Cycle Wheels. All right, so next we got OLP Pop Culture and Music Updates. So if you haven't checked out Unsolved on USA Networks, this is the series that USA did today, or excuse me, that USA did for Biggie and Pac. And a lot of these have popped up. I know there's one on A&E. I haven't watched it yet. Of course, got the Tupac, All Eyes on Me movie. You had the Biggie movie. Both of those were not well received, you know, or critically acclaimed. But over this past weekend, I started watching on the USA Networks app on Apple TV. I went in and said, you know, let me check out the first episode, which I think there's 4 or 5 episodes now. And I really did enjoy it. It's produced really well. It tells a great story. It kind of bounces around a little bit between the first Tupac shooting, of course, the fatal one, or, you know, the one that he, you know, passed away in Vegas. It's got Suge in there. It really, really, really is produced really well. So I'm kind of looking forward to finishing that series. I'm all caught up now, so make sure you check it out. It's called Unsolved. You can also, if you want to watch any of the clips, you can go on Instagram and just type in Unsolved, and it's Unsolved USA. That's the official page of USA Network's newest crime drama. All right, so I also picked up You God of Wu-Tang, his new album, Venom, and he had a new book that dropped right at the same time, a week or two apart. If you go on Amazon, just search You-God, and make sure you pick up both of these items, or you can at least stream the album on Spotify or Apple Music. It's definitely a cool album. He's one of the lesser-known members of the Wu. I've got his albums, and he always puts out great stuff, so make sure you check him out. If you look at my Instagram, at BD94S10, you'll see that I tagged him if you want to follow him on Instagram. You Godzilla. All right, so next, I got just kind of a general update. Some of you guys may remember last year I talked about Texplex. And if you go on Instagram and type in Tex, T-E-X, Plex, you're going to see that they have about 3,300 followers, but this is the company that out in Texas is rebuilding the Hell Track for 2018. They're going to be filming a movie there. When I talked to Bill Allen on the phone, I want to say it was last November, I had mentioned something to him, and he said, yeah, we're filming, you know, for everybody that comes out, you have a chance to be an extra. I went ahead and picked up a VIP ticket to that event. Now, here's the bad thing. The event is the same weekend as Scraping the Coast. So I've got to kind of figure this out if I can make both. The VIP portion of the event is on that Thursday, which is like the Thursday before Scraping. So I'm going to try to, you know, see what I can do. But it's going to be really cool. There's going to be a vintage BMX bike show. Bill Allen will be there. So he'll be signing autographs and kind of doing all that stuff. And if you search on Instagram, it's Bill, BillSlimAllen. And that's the official Bill Allen, the Rad Army. You'll see he's got plenty of cool photos there. And after all these years, after 32 years of Rad being out and debuting, he's still doing it, man. He embraces the whole Crew Jones thing, and I think it's pretty freaking rad. Lastly, we've got some tech updates. So this week, iOS 11.3 rolled out. Apple announced a new iPad. So it's the new 9.7-inch iPad, which is the 6th generation. What they've done is essentially put it a lower price point to go ahead and try to, it looks like, sell more to the education sector with these different school systems and get them to buy into the Mac, iOS type ecosystem. And that's great for business, because anytime you can get businesses to buy your product and you get kids ingrained in the whole iCloud and iOS and, you know, the Mac platform ecosystem, it's great. So you got a lower price point. I think it's $329, and then of course if you get the 4G model, that, you know, that adds that increases the price just over $100. But one thing that I did not notice, you'll hear me continue to talk about to leave a rating. One thing that you can do, so for you iPhone users or iOS users out there, if you go and you search within the podcast app for Our Lifestyle Podcast, you can tap on that and you can go ahead and scroll down. So, you know, you're going to scroll all the way down and then you can actually leave a rating. So for whatever reason, I missed when Apple started to allow for ratings to be left via the iOS or podcast app. This is great because I know not everyone has iTunes, not everyone has a computer. Hell, if you have a computer, you may never even fire that thing up anymore. So, you know, make sure you go out there. All you have to do is tap on the stars. Hopefully it's a 5-star rating. And you can click see all, and you can also write a review. So even if you just tap the 5 stars, boom, that helps us. But if you want to go a little extra, tap on write a review. You just have to make a title. And then, of course, a review, which is optional, and then hit send. It really, really, really helps us out, and it helps other people find the podcast. So with that being said, I definitely want to thank Sparkles Detail. So make sure you hit up sparklesdetail.com. You heard them in the initial intro. They actually just had iCandy Designs reprint the new logo, which is the Rad logo, and that is on their trailer, and they're headed out to Forbidden Fantasy. So we're super stoked to continue that partnership. Also, Scraping the Coast. So we just had Greg on, and we talked about Orange Beach Invasion for episode 56 and 57. We're going to be coming at you live and direct in the near future to talk pre, during, and after Scraping the Coast 2018. This is an event you will not want to miss. You've seen that it's the really one of the biggest shows on the entire East Coast. It's a Greg Miller production, custom car show production, and the Gulf Coast, man, is popping off. So definitely looking forward to Scraping the Coast 2018. Lastly, make sure you follow Grindr TV on Instagram and on YouTube, and also Low Life Mikey. He shows us a lot of love on Instagram. So on YouTube, type in the Low Life Show. He recently dropped a DVD, so you can support him by purchasing that on his website. Click the link from his Instagram bio. It's a really, really badass DVD. Hell, if you ask him to autograph it, he might just do that for you too. So I hope you enjoy these interviews. We appreciate you listening. If you're a first-time listener, thanks. Make sure you subscribe. We got another episode coming very soon. We've got a lot of great folks lined up to interview. So we just want to say we appreciate y'all. We got you. Peace. You don't stop, you keep running. Yeah, you don't stop, you can't run on that to escalate things. You don't stop, huh? Well, just broke me in, cause I thought I was Eddie Harris. You're eating crazy cheese like you would think I'm from Paris. You know I'm getting strong, you think I get high. You know that I'm going and I'ma tell your own mom. So tell me, who are you dissing? Maybe I'm missing the reason that you're smiling around. And so listen, in my head I just... Yo, it's Our Lifestyle, the podcast, episode 58, and we've got a special guest, got Mike Schartzis, who was an early mini trucking editor, but we've also got the homie Ruben. Ruben, what's going down? Mike, how you doing?
Jason, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Mike, thanks for your time, for, you know, coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. I got a chance to meet you a couple years ago, and it was definitely a pleasure. I always remember kind of, you know, seeing your name in the magazine. And over the years, Ruben kind of introduced me and said, hey, you know, Mike would be an awesome guest. And I couldn't agree more. But, you know, Ruben, you've been on a couple times and we always appreciate that. But I wanted to kind of give the listener or give Mike an opportunity to give the listeners maybe like a little bit of insight, Mike, on yourself. Like, who is Mike Schartzis?
I'm one of the many former editors of Mini Truckin' Magazine. You know, I was an enthusiast first and an editor second, and was involved in the truck scene back from my high school days.
Heck yeah, man. Well, when I think back to like the good old days, and you grew up in, what is it, California?
Correct.
Yep. So I always just envision, and I know this is like so cliche, I envision like, you know, you were skateboarding and then, you know, BMXing, and then the bikes came in and the VWs and then the mini trucks, you know, all that coolness. But so at like what age would you say that you kind of got involved with the truck scene? Because it sounds like if you were doing it in high school, you must have been one of those guys that was hanging out with at least skateboarders and all that stuff, man.
Well, yeah, skateboarding and BMX was definitely in back in those days. Automotive-wise, I kind of got my start in the muscle car scene. In fact, my first car was a 65 Mustang Fastback that I drove through high school and fixed up. In fact, Ruben helped me work on that in an auto shop class in high school back in, 87?
86, 87, around there.
Yeah. It wasn't until actually during high school, while I still had my Mustang, that I got exposed to the mini truck scene.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple of brothers that had a mini truck that went to the high school that Ruben and I went to, and they shared this truck, and they used to lower it and drag it across the ground all the time. And in fact, I think they had to pay some fines. They had to pay to have a speed bump replaced in high school because the U-bolts on their lowering blocks in the back scraped big old gouges through this speed bump at high school.
Yeah, this thing was crazy. If I remember right, it had Mercedes-Benz hubcaps on it, and they ended up pulling the torsion bars out of it. They took the leaf springs out, and they flipped them upside down, and there were two sets of speed bumps to get back into where auto shop was, where all the shop classes were.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever was riding with them would have to get out and kind of
push.
You know, push
get them over the hump.
Get up on it to get over. And our shop teacher, Mr. Hamilton, God rest his soul, if he's gone or whatever, but man, he would go out there and just scream. And they didn't graduate until they paid for, or until their parents paid for that speed bump.
Yeah. And they never even attempted to, like, take that speed bump at an angle. They would just take it straight on every time, intentionally, just trying to rip it off every time.
Oh, man.
So that was, like, my first experience, the mini truck scene. And then Ruben had an Opel GT back in high school that he drove. But it was Ruben who actually got a mini truck first.
Okay.
And him and then my neighbor had an S10 pickup truck. My neighbor, Tom Wright, who was the silent partner with Sean Mahaney at Trendsetter Minis when he started working on trucks.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes, I remember. I believe Sean brought up his name. Yeah, whenever I interviewed Sean last year. God rest his soul.
Yeah. So Tom had an S10, an old box style S10, and his dad was a long haul truck driver. And Tom and Sean would lower his S10 while his dad was gone for like 2 or 3 weeks at a time on the road.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd call and let Tommy know that he was coming into town. And then Tommy would have to raise his truck up before his dad got home.
Oh, man, dude, that is classic. Yeah, Yeah, that's crazy. So my buddy, he had a neighbor, Adam, and when we got into trucks, he had like a little Nissan Hardbody, and it was probably the lowest static drop truck I had ever seen. And, you know, I was just starting to work on my truck, and he had this thing lowered, and we had a couple of those, like these real big things, like, you know, you kind of coming out of a parking lot. And a couple times we had the same thing where he's like, man, you need to get out and push. And I'm going, what the hell? And there's cars all behind us. I'm like, okay, you know. But, yeah, those are the good old days. Now, it sounds like you guys have been friends basically since high school.
Yeah.
I actually lived in Long Beach. Mike grew up in Lakewood. And I would have gone to the same high school that Snoop Dogg would have gone to.
Yeah.
All high school. And then, but that was a little rough for my parents' liking. So my sister first got to go to Lakewood High School, which was in a little better neighborhood at the time. And when it was my turn to go to high school, my parents sent me over there, and I didn't know anyone. And Mike was one of the first persons that I got to meet there. And 30 plus years later, we're still friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not too often that you can have a friend for that long, but you guys kind of shared for many years, you know, the same kind of the whole culture, you know, the mini truck culture. And that kind of leads me into, you know, Mike, you had alluded from like the Mini Truck Magazine standpoint, you know, you mentioned that you were the editor in some of the, what I'll call like the early days. Like, when did you start and how did you kind of get your foot in the door? Obviously you're out there in California, but was there something like in high school that you got the writing gene or something like that?
Well, yeah, I actually, back in high school, I think I took a photography class because it was an excuse to like wander the campus during class hours.
Uh-huh.
And I was able to go to football games and stuff for free. So I took a photography class and I was into photography a little bit, but it wasn't, let's see here. I was actually the editor. I was at Mini Truck and Magazine from 92 to 98. And my foot in the door was actually my 88 Celine Ranger. I got approached by Brian McCormick while attending Truck Jam, and he wanted to shoot my truck for the May 91 cover of Truckin' Magazine. And when the time came around to meet up, I asked if I could hang out during the shoot.
Uh-huh.
And Brian joked that I just wanted to hang out with the cover model, Rhonda Koch, that was there. But the truth of the matter was that I was a photographer and I was really interested in the studio lighting and the camera equipment that he was using.
Uh-huh.
And so he must have put that little bit of knowledge in the back of his brain. And a few weeks later, I got a phone call from Steve Stillwell, the editor or the group director for the truck group at the time and the editor of Truckin' Magazine. Later, this is a funny story. Later, we met up for, if you want to call it an interview, it was at Frisco Burger, which was a hot rod hangout in Downey, California. And we met up there. To say the least, I turned a few heads rolling my Ranger into the parking lot with a bunch of classic trucks and hot rods.
Hell yeah.
But yep. Yeah, suck it up, Buttercup. Mini Truckers in the house.
Yeah, I like that,
but,
man.
But Steve and I stood around and talked about Mini Trucking Magazine for quite a while. And he asked me what I thought about, you know, the direction it was going and the audience that they were trying to target with it and stuff. And during this whole thing, both of us would stop mid-sentence to point out some cool car or classic truck that was driving by or driving into the parking lot. And then a few weeks later, I got offered a staff editor position on Truckin' Magazine and soon thereafter, editor of Mini Truckin' Magazine.
Yeah, that's almost like a case of when you're explaining there, I'm thinking, you know, right time, you know, you were a well-behaved, you know, teenager, I'm sure. And, you know, you there was something that stuck out to Steve, and we all know Steve's name from the magazine and things like that, such as yours. So it's kind of cool to hear a little bit of the history of, man, how it just actually came together, man. I appreciate that.
No, it was pretty surreal, you know. And then, I mean, after that, it was probably 6 months after that when Courtney Hallowell came to work with us. And it was just funny because Courtney showed up to the office in, like, slacks and a button-down shirt and all dressed up for an interview. And, you know, it was interesting. So I think I was the last to be treated to more of a laid-back setting when it came to coming to work for the magazine.
Yeah, kind of like the Wild West is what we call it at work. Like back in the good old days, we're like, man, we could do anything we wanted. Now it's like, how long have you been in the bathroom for? It's, you know, it's crazy how
yeah.
the times have came. But Ruben, I bet you were stoked when the homie Mike got the job because you're probably thinking, man, I got the hookup now, man. My homie's working at the magazine.
You know what? I think everybody thought that, but I'll be quite honest with you. I never saw Mike as that guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, Mike's always been Mike to me, no matter who's he's worked for or what he's done or what he's had. He's always been Mike. I mean, you know, if I needed help with, you know, my truck or digging a hole in my backyard for something, I mean, he's always been there for me and vice versa. That's just the friend he's been to me and the friendship that we've had. And I'm not going to lie, he's helped me out a lot with my builds and, mm-hmm. and, you know, with getting my stuff on the cover and, you know, publication and whatnot. But, you know, it is cool, but I've just never seen him that like that, you know, and I've always been there while he's working or I've tagged along with him. And, you know, and when Mike was inducted into the Hall of Fame, he had asked me to introduce him to that. And mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to be there that night on stage and introduce him. And, I want everyone to know that when he was working for the book, he was always working for the book. I mean, he was never off. So after hours on a Sunday, on a Saturday, on a holiday, he was constantly working. He was never off. And that's why during the time that he worked there, that book looked the way it did.
Because yeah, it was top notch.
He really cared. He really cared.
Well, and I collect the magazine like many guys do now. And it's, to me, when you look back, I mean, you see just an awesome work of a lot of hustle month after month, and it really came out like with these awesome covers, the features. You know, you mentioned Brian McCormick. I used to love looking at his features and looking at the write-ups. Same with yours, Mike. I mean, so many cool things, man.
Yeah, it was a good time back then, but we were definitely busy. That might explain why Ruben politely never came to work for me, because he'd been offered positions at Mini Truck and Magazine in the past.
Well, that says
you know what, I had my hands full, and you know what, I did a lot of freelancing at the time, and I you know, I whenever I'd have a day off, and hey, dude, go do tech for me here, shoot a show here, and I would. And at the time, I was working for a chemical company, making pretty good money, and I didn't want to travel. I saw the bright lights, and I also saw the darker side of that industry, and I honestly didn't want any part of it.
Yeah, we were pretty busy back in the day. It was work from Monday to Thursday in the office during the week, and then it was, you know, Friday morning we were on a plane. I was on a plane to a show, and then Sunday back on a plane and back to work. I mean, it was a lot of work back then, but it was a lot of fun, too. I mean, I can't say it wasn't.
No, I'm not saying that either, but I live vicariously through Mike. Let's just say that.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, I think what's cool is, if you think about the craziness of how the world is today with Snapchat and Instagram, and you can share things so quick. You know, I always think back to like when they made cards back in the 50s and 60s, right? Before computers and things were stamped, and there was really that work ethic. Well, when you think about the magazine or any magazine in the 80s into the 90s, there was no digital. There's no internet. You know, how do you connect with people other than someone writing a letter going, hey, I'm, you know, Joe Schmo from Florida, you know? So it really does.
Right.
When you look back at the work that was completed, it was a monumental task compared to what people have, even myself, like in the technology world today.
Yeah, it was something else, and to be able to work so far in advance because of the print schedules. You know, we were working 3 to 4 months in advance on monthly projects. So, you know, and having to get a magazine to the printer on time was something that was always a challenge. But I was always proud of the fact that I never shipped a magazine late.
Yeah, you
met shipping
those
a magazine
deadlines.
Late meant a lot of money. So.
Gotcha. Well, that kind of leads into my next question for you, Mike. You know, you're giving us some awesome insight, and I love it, man. I really do. I know the listeners are going to love, you know, what they're hearing. But, like, when you were the editor, like, what was the pressure like in those times? Because you kind of, you know, you sounded like at that time you were a pretty young guy, right? You know, and as readers, we saw this as a monthly publication. It hit newsstands. Of course, many of us were kind of itching for it to come into the mailbox. But was there like a lot of tension or the stress other than what you said with the travel piece and, you know, 7 days a week?
Yeah, it was, I mean, hell yes, there was a lot, the pressure was on. And like I said, true fact, I never shipped an issue late to the printer, not even once.
Got it.
And then back then, the presses never really stopped due to the popularity of print magazines of all kinds. I mean, so, you know, you had to have your books there and you had to have them on time, or you were paying thousands and thousands of dollars per hour that those printers were sitting still. So it was a big deal, and there was a fair amount of pressure. And then you also mentioned the fact that, you know, I was a young man. When I went to work for the publication, I wasn't even old enough to rent a rental car for myself.
Damn.
So oftentimes I'd have to travel with Brian or somebody else that was older that could get a rental car. And oddly enough, my goatee, which I still have today, was a suggestion from Steve Stillwell, because I had such a baby face and I would always get carded, because back in the day, they didn't always actually ask you for your driver's license when you got your rental car. They would just ask you for your driver's license number. And back then, everybody knew their driver's license number. And if you looked old enough, they'd rent you a car. So with the goatee, I could go and travel to the events by myself.
Hell yeah. Talk about the Wild Wild West, man. I love it. Well, Ruben, speak kind of off topic here. So speaking about going to the printer and the press piece and that type of thing, being that, you know, you were friends with Mike and your truck, you know, you had that epic shoot. Love that cover. One of my favorites, right? How, from the point that it was shot, you know, and you kind of know, and then Mike's like, hey, yeah, these photos came out well, you know, or however, you know, you pretty much knew your truck was going to be on the cover, right? Because it's a sick truck. But what was the, was there anxiety waiting for it to finally come?
Oh, man. I knew, we shot that cover. It was a few days after Rezo 94. I believe it was like on a Monday. It was right after that New Year's, I want to say. And we went out to San Pedro to Sunken City off of Palos Verde Peninsula. And if I remember right, I think Mike said, hey, if anyone shows up or starts asking questions what we're doing it for a school project.
There you go.
Yeah, okay, no problem.
It's a college school project. Don't tell them we're from the magazine.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, okay. So we get out there, and I had spent the whole entire, I took a day off, I think, and I spent the whole day cleaning the thing. And I knew we were going to shoot it for cover. I wasn't sure how it was going to turn out or whether I knew it was going to turn out good. But yeah, there was a little bit of, I guess, I was a little anxious to see what, I knew it could turn out nice. I didn't know it was going to turn out that nice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was stoked to see it. I mean, you know, going back to Mike's story about Tom's dad being a truck driver and coming back and they had to raise a truck up. My dad had a really bad time with me buying stuff and lowering it, customizing it, and he'd always be pissed off. But all that kind of ended like once I started coming home and bringing trophies home. But when I came home with that cover,
he's like, man, look, I told you you should have did this, Ruben.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, no shit. I mean, his attitude totally changed. It's like, oh, so what's next plan for the truck? Well, Dad, I'm thinking about pulling this off and chroming that and, you know, thinking about changing this around. It's like, oh, well, if you need help, you know, I'll, you know, and it led to something else. Yeah. And something else and something else. And now, I mean, now when the truck that I'm building now, I kind of had a talk with him the other day about what I'm doing with that. And he got all excited about it. But
yeah,
it was that cover, man. I'll tell you that changed a lot for me. And I guess it kind of got my mindset going in another direction of other stuff that I wanted to do.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of like a foresight into, you know, growing up and kind of saying, hey, what, you know, some of the things I want to be attached to as I get older. But, you know, I think it's
right.
Awesome.
And, yeah. And another thing, and I've never really shared this with a lot of people, but I know Mike knows. And when he said, I want to say we were at Rezo, and he's like, Mike comes up to me and, dude, we got to shoot your truck, but it's not ready. No, it's ready. Dude, it's not ready. It's ready. And honestly, in my eyes and my vision, that truck wasn't ready.
Gotcha.
Well, they
never are. But yeah, in my vision, it wasn't ready.
Yeah,
we have to remember back in the day when it came to these publications, there were so many different magazines, and we were competing on the newsstand that we just had to have the right vehicles. And oftentimes, Ruben, you know, as an owner, owners would say, you know, what's not finished? Well, it's finished enough. I mean, Pat Nichols' truck is a prime example. That truck took on a very different persona once it was on the cover of Mini Truck and Magazine. Ruben's truck, a lot of people. It's not often, at least back then, that we photographed really finished trucks,
sure,
per se. I mean, they were finished. It's just that the scene was so new that people were still doing more and more and more. And
when my truck was shot for the cover, I Hate Phil did it, and you know he's a newer school guy, a real talented photographer. He has a lot of his stuff runs in Truckin' Today, and I remember going, man, you know, these little things, and he was like, Jason, he's like, that's not even going to show up. And it's crazy because, you know, you have a show truck, and when someone's judging it, they come up to it and they're like, oh, look, there's this little scratch on the frame, and you know, right, whatever. But like in a photo, even with high resolution, like the way magazines are, you know, you don't see those little imperfections. So, like, I totally get it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know what? 3 months later, I tear the whole thing apart.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
and then, like, 3 months after that, it goes back apart. So yeah.
The story of many.
That was kind of the back then.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you this, Mike. In your opinion, those, you know, several years that you worked there, like, how many features do you think you shot? Obviously, I know they don't all run. You know, some of them you get back, the film's processed, and it's like, this one just didn't work out. But, like, do you think you shot, I'm just throwing numbers out there, 100 features?
Oh, way more than that. I really have no idea. I'd say, I mean, I shot a lot of trucks back in the day during the events that I traveled to. It was not uncommon to come home from a show with 10-plus feature vehicles, and that was per staff that was in attendance. We also, there for a time on Mini Trucking Magazine, we also shared photography by working together as a team. Sometimes, like, I would shoot the exteriors, Courtney would shoot the interiors, and maybe Sean Carlson would shoot the engine and undercarriage. I mean, we did it like a production line. We did it often at some of the bigger events, like Texas Heat Wave and out at the river for Spring Splash and stuff like that.
Man, dude, just hearing Spring Splash, that's sick, dude.
Yeah, I remember one year, in DeCoin, Illinois for the Street Machine Nationals, Brian McCormick and I think we shot like 47 vehicles.
Wow.
And we were like snatching them up, and it was like, because Sport Truck was there, so someone would say that, you know, that Sport Truck's shooting our truck, so then we'd go out and shoot it like a few hours before
they
shot it.
You're like, yeah, but let's go over here now, you know? Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Well, I mean, you brought up a lot of, I mean, hearing Spring Splash and you know, obviously the old Texas Heat Wave, but the River Runs, and, you know, hearing Sean Carlson's name, you mentioned Courtney earlier, all of that to me just translates into awesomeness. When I look back at some of, I shared a photo, and I'm going to have to make sure I send this one to you. There's an old truck in, it was like early 90s, and what was cool is there was even guys on BMX bikes, and they were like jumping into the river. And I posted the photo, yeah. And somebody was like, he's like, please post more of this, you know? And it's like that one photo captured just so much that just even me living in Florida, I'm like, that was the shit, man, right there.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what kind of like turned it into a lifestyle as opposed to just fixing up trucks, you know? It was the people and the antics and the events that we went to. And yeah, there was a lot of excitement going to the River Runs and a lot of different experiences in life for a lot of people for the first time there. So,
yeah, that's good stuff. I'd love to meet Brian McCormick one day. I've read so many of his, you know, editorials and stuff. And it's funny because he's on Instagram now, and, you know, there's like K Daddy and there's some different guys, and, you know, anytime I walk out to my shop and I flip open these magazines and I start, you know, going, man, and I post it, and I'm tagging everybody. Some of these old school guys are probably like, man, quit tagging me. But I mean, Brian really shot a lot of features too. Even looking back to like the late 80s, I was blown away. I'm like, man, he did this feature, you know, and I'm just like still amazed.
Oh, no, absolutely. Brian was instrumental in teaching me a lot of my photography skills that I carried on later in life. We all worked together, Steve and Brian and myself and everybody that was on staff. Everybody kind of pitched in and worked together with each other.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you sharing a lot of those memories, man. And, you know, Ruben, I was going to ask you, you know, obviously we've set the stage that you and Mike have been friends for a very long time. You know, how awesome was it knowing you kind of grew up in the whole mini truck scene? Because if you think about what mini truckers are today, you were pretty much at the infancy, is what I call it, of it. You know what I mean? I mean, how awesome was that?
Yo, what's up, Airhead Nation? It's Ron Perkins from Hammered Weekend Wear, and you're listening to Our Lifestyle, the podcast. Hey, after this episode, check out the fresh new gear we have over at hammeredweekendwear.com. That's HAMMERD, weekendwear.com. Now let's get back to the show.
You know, looking back at it, I'm fortunate. You know, looking back at it, I gotta say I was very fortunate to grow up in that stage of it where it's simplicity, where you didn't have to have $1 million to have something cool. I mean, you were cool on a clean truck with stock wheels if it was just dropped right. I mean, hell, you didn't even have to have a nice system in it or anything. I mean, if it was just lowered a little bit on stock wheels, you're cool.
Yeah, you just roll down the windows. It's Friday. Right. You kind of kick it with the homies. You got your Walkmans, your tapes, and you're just ready to roll, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was just something. I mean, simpler times, I guess. I mean, we're going back now, what, 30 years of it? You know, when initially doing it, you know, back when we were right out of high school, and I don't know, it was just a lot more, times were a lot more simpler. God, I feel old now.
Well, yeah. You guys aren't that much older than I am, but like I grew up in you know, the 80s. I love the 80s. Obviously, you guys see what I post, you know, if you follow the page. And when I watch, like, I'll tell my son all the time, let's watch E.T. And he's like, Dad, I don't want to watch that movie. It's stupid. And I'm like, and like every weekend, it's like, hey, let's put Back to the Future on or Goonies, you know? And he kind of likes Goonies because I think he, you know, I don't know if it's the girls in there or what, but it's like when you watch the Goonies and they're riding the bikes and it's just like, damn, man, those were awesome times. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's right. Interesting to think back to those days and think it's hard to realize that we were living history when it was happening. You know, you don't realize it until you look back on it.
Yeah.
All these years ago.
It's true. And I think that's why like Instagram and stuff like that has become so big, and eBay, because you'd be amazed. And you guys have seen this, like the people that collect, like I collect old stuff, but you know, there's people that want, I collect like Back to the Future stuff. I don't have a crazy collection, but there's people that want the exact same, you know, clock radio that he had in the movie, or the exact same Walkman, you know, or jacket. And, you know, it's like you can collect this stuff and you can almost relive your childhood. It almost gets a little insane, but I'm borderline insane. So, like, you know, I kind of understand it.
Aren't we all?
I mean, I'm amazed on seeing all the mini trucking magazines that are pop up for sale and the prices that are attached to these. I mean, there's vintage issues of Hot Rod Magazine and much more prestigious publications that don't sell single copies for $75 to $150 a piece.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Cult, like that huge cult following.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff. Well, now, like you guys go back, you know, to the early days of the mini truck scene. You know, what was it like, I would say, in terms of the atmosphere? You know, we kind of talked about it, but like on a Friday night, you talked about this in the past, Ruben, about the cruises and stuff, but did you guys like all just pull up at your buddy's house and, you know, roll down the windows, jump in the rides and go cruise? Or do you have a lot of memories of kind of doing that kind of stuff with you guys hanging out?
One of my favorite, or... Actually, I do have a couple of handful of memories, and the ones that stick out to me is what we would do as a club, early days of relaxed atmosphere, is we would all meet up. We'd meet up at that McDonald's on Beach Boulevard right down the street from Knott's Berry Farm, and we would go down south on Beach Boulevard and down the PCH, and we would go out to Ruby's out in Newport?
Laguna Niguel.
And, I mean, there would be... 10, 15 of us, all of the trucks.
Way more than us.
Yeah,
there were sometimes when we'd be in PCH and you could stretch out for miles and we'd get 30 or 40 trucks, sometimes bigger than that. But the scenes that we would like, when you talk about rolling into someplace, we'd always try to meet as a club down the street from wherever we were going to go to. And then just roll in hard with, you know, all the badass trucks.
Yeah, and to me, like, I haven't gotten a chance. I'm probably going to be persecuted for saying this, but I haven't made it to any of the Cars and Coffee here in the Tampa Bay area. And, you know, they're, like, all the rage. Bad thing is, at the end of the week, I'm exhausted, you know, and it's early on, like, a Saturday or whatever. But, you know, in all seriousness, it almost seems like, you know, the Cars and Coffee, like, they get packed over here as they do all across the U.S. But back then, it was kind of like, you know, we were teenagers, you know, young adults. We, you know, on Friday night, we didn't have plans with the kids or, you know, our girlfriends and stuff. It was like, hey, let's hang out with the homies. But it would have been amazing if we would have had camera phones back then. I mean, imagine all the cool photos you guys would have had, you know?
I mean,
you can't even imagine. We would roll into Carl's Jr. and Buena Park right down the street from Knott's Berry Farm. And, I mean, we'd roll in with 30 or 40 trucks. There was already 400-plus mini trucks there. And we didn't ask anybody. We didn't ask Carl's Jr. if we could use their place. There's no
permits and all that stuff back then. It was just, hey, that's where we're going.
It was someone, that's where we would show up, you know.
Someone out there has to have video footage of that. someone out there has to have it, you know, and it's going to surface up someday. And I hope somebody puts it at radar or somebody gets it and puts it on a video, because there's no way to describe how crazy it would get.
And, you know, and if I remember right, Ruben, I think Lee Bauer used to have like a VHS,
the big
camcorder,
ass one,
you know,
yeah,
like the big ass one. And I think that I remember seeing him roll around Carl's Jr. with that thing on his shoulder once or twice. So I'm sure, like you said, there's video.
Well, a couple quick things then. So one, when I first got in the scene and I was like trying to figure out who to buy parts from, I'd go to Mini Truckin' and I looked up Steve Nielsen over at Ultra Images. And Steve, back in kind of the late 90s, when I'd order stuff, he would film stuff and then he would throw it on a VHS tape and he threw it in. So I've got one of these old VHS tapes, and actually the homie Brian at Grindr TV has it. He's going to convert it for me. But I remember watching it maybe 10 or 12 years ago, and it was just, there was some Cow Truck Jam on there. There was some of Bob Grant working on, I think, Twisted Metal. It was just, you know, it had that Cali atmosphere and stuff. So, you know, those VHS tapes, they do sometimes surface. And then the one other thing I was going to say, I always go on YouTube and I'm looking for Back to the Future stuff or whatever. Well, of all things I found last night, it was when they were filming the final scene of the third movie, there were like the next door neighbors in the little neighborhood, like they just got their video camera out and they had filmed like 45 minutes and it's real shaky, but it's like you see all the actors there and in between cuts and stuff. And it's just like kind of crazy, right? Because like I've seen that movie so many times, but now to be able to watch it from a different angle or, right, you know, the side, it's like, ah, oh, that's kind of cool, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's cool.
So yeah, so good stuff. Now, you know, Mike, I've collected, I mentioned, you know, a lot of magazines over the years. And back at the Hall of Fame Mini Truck Induction, and, you know, you were the class of 2015, so, you know, congrats again. I believe...
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I believe that I recall, you know, you had mentioned something about, when you were speaking, about print magazines and kind of how they live on forever. And, you know, well, obviously since it's print, you know, that's key. But how vital do you believe, like, print magazines and books, et cetera, are versus maybe the online world that we have today?
Well, you know, it seems like the print media definitely went away. But, you know, to a certain extent, it seems like it's making a little bit of a comeback. I see it more so in the book industry as opposed to magazines. But I think that there's room for print media to have a presence in today's scene. You know, back in the day, the newsstands were so crowded and it was so expensive and difficult to get on a newsstand. Now, I would imagine there's a lot more space and availability to get those titles out there. So it's interesting to see, you know, some of the traditional books like Truckin' and Street Trucks still plugging away at it. But the online and the social media side of it seems to have picked up a lot, and
exactly like you said, it's like a
it's
mix.
It is a mix, but the future seems, you know, seems to reflect a little of both, and I think that's a good thing. The print media, to me, there's more, I don't know, there's more anticipation to wait and actually see it, where it seems like with the online stuff, there's always a little teaser here and a little teaser there. And by the time somebody debuts something, you feel like you've already seen it.
And it's hard to keep it under wraps. Exactly.
It is. And I think it's easier when you wait for it to appear in a magazine, because there's a better amount of time before it actually hits the newsstands. But, you know, instant gratification. It's definitely nice to go online and see photos from an event that you attended or are still at.
I know, right?
You guys work very hard, you know, to upload stuff and get things out there so quickly now. So I'm amazed by it, because I don't know how you guys do it. So
I know, right? It's crazy.
That's the age we live in, guys.
Yeah, and like I was just on Instagram before we started, and the homie, we haven't had him on, but Nick at Surface Art, you know, he's a wonderful photographer, and if you go like on Surface DVD, I think it's actually on his personal one. It's like Nick Surface Art. But on Instagram, like, he's literally uploading like all these photos. He's like batch upload, you know? And I'm like, man, another one. But yeah, that's kind of the way it's the way it is now, and it is insane that we have unlimited data on our phones, and you know, you can stream and do all this stuff, and it's crazy. Now, I did want to kind of ask, and this is, I guess, to kind of wrap up the subject, but you know, having grown up in the epicenter of the mini trucking culture, you know, what role do you, you know, do you guys really kind of think that, you know, Courtney Hallowell, you know, he's a big name and rightfully so, you know, he's beloved by many people, but you know, with Courtney and the mini trucking magazine in general, like how much did that play in spreading the whole mini trucker cult phenomenon? And the reason why I ask is, to me, I don't think mini trucking would be today, obviously, without mini trucking magazine.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think the magazine itself, crossed so many different genres and so many different people from different parts of the nation, all around the world, to be honest. And the influence that a handful of people, Courtney Hallowell, Sean Carlson, Lance Martz, myself, several other people had back in those days, has a lifelong effect, if you ask me, to the scene. It's just something that is contributed to and then continues to grow. It sparks that interest in an enthusiast that didn't grow up reading the magazines when I was writing them, is maybe getting into the scene now, but now is able to go back and look at, you know, the history, a timeline, and the people that contributed to it. I don't know, maybe it lends it some more credibility because it's been around for 30 plus years now.
I don't disagree at all. And Mike, I mean, if you think about, too, when you're talking there, I'm thinking, like, if you look at any show coverage from Japan or you see what these guys in Japan are doing, I mean, these guys are building mini trucks. Like, some of them, I don't know where they get their hands on these old 70s mini trucks, but it's almost like Japan, it's grown, and they really want to emulate that early mini trucking history and culture. And I just think that is, like, you know, you talk about a stamp of approval of the type of work that you did and all those long hours that you put in. It still lives on today, in my opinion, man. And we see it.
Well, I appreciate people recognizing it because it was a lot of work back then. But, you know, we had all of us that were working in the magazine enjoyed doing it. And my induction into the Hall of Fame kind of brought it all to the forefront for me in realizing how much of an impact I had on so many people's lives. And so it was very rewarding. And it's good to know that, you know, I've had an impact on something.
Hell yeah, man. I know, right? Well, the one thing I wanted to kind of ask, and, you know, Ruben, like, when you look back, you know, does it seem surreal to you that really the mini truck lifestyle or the culture was practically born out of what came from, like, Truck and Mag? Because, you know, I just bought I have the first year, Mike, of the Truck and Mag, and I got it from the homie down south who sells the mini truck and magazines. And like the first year was like six issues, and they're like pristine condition. But when you look at like, dude, it's sick. And when you look at like the old trucking magazines, you had the Vans, and my dad was kind of in the Vans a little bit and that type of thing. But it almost seems like when mini trucking came, it was a spin, right, Ruben, of the Vans, mixed in with the culture of the skateboard and BMX lifestyle.
Right. It was. My dad had a friend that he worked with, and they used to carpool, and he had a Datsun 720 King Cab with the big fiberglass shell on the back with the fender flares and the Western wheels with the wider wheels in the back and the traction bars, and, you know, the thing would barely move. It had a little four cylinder in it, and the guy was a vanner that ended up getting rid of the van. I believe the story went because the truck got a better fuel mileage. But those trucks, mini trucking was born from the van craze, and you know, going back and seeing that, and I don't know, when I was a kid, when I was about maybe, I don't know, 11, 12 years old, and seeing those trucks, it's kind of weird because it never caught my attention, you know, and being back that young, I think I was more into like the muscle car stuff and, you know, stuff that was louder and stuff. But as they progressed, as the trucks got a little newer and a little bit more modern, that's what caught my eye. But yet I was still, when I started getting into them, I knew where they came from. I knew where it evolved from.
Hells yeah.
Yeah, it, you know, to me, it always seemed natural that it was a trickle-down effect of the van movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were already doing stuff. I remember seeing some photos just recently that Brian McCormick posted up of his family, in their family van back in the day and stuff like that. So, yeah, and then, you know, the earlier events that we went to, you know, Bonton, that was a van run. And
yes.
They opened it up and invited mini truckers, and then we took it over, you know. So,
big
you know, and as for the magazine came about because there was so much interest in the mini truck scene. They couldn't put enough of them in Truckin' Magazine every month, you know, because they had to have a classic truck, they had to have a mini truck, they had to have a late model truck.
Sure.
There just wasn't a space, but it opened the door to launching a new magazine. And they were very surprised by the success of Mini Truckin' Magazine early on.
Yeah, it almost reminds me when it just clicked, like Netflix when they signed Stranger Things, right? If you like the 80s and if you haven't watched it, you got to watch Stranger Things. They didn't think that it was going to be, you know, they're like, oh, you know, it's just a show. And then you have this thing that's like, boom, it really is a hit. It seems like that's what described mini trucking. It really just took off, and it was like, it was all the stars, or as my dad would have said, it's all the planets aligning, you know?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't aligned a lot to get that magazine launched, but it surprised a lot of people, but it lasted a long time, a lot longer than people thought it would, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. And I kind of wanted to switch subjects. And, you know, you mentioned talking about mini trucking, though, the Ranger that you had. And I'm going to dig up some old photos and hopefully you'll share some with us. I know I've got, you know, it kind of appeared in different facets within the magazines. And you mentioned the cover as well. But can you kind of give us a little bit of rundown? Because the last few photos I saw of that when I was scanning through the magazine, I mean, that was a super awesome clean truck, Mike, back in the, you know, even today, if you still had it, it would still be killing it.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool back in the day. You know, it started off was, like I mentioned earlier, I was into the muscle car scene. And back in high school, I had muscle cars, I had a Mustang, and I was kind of into the street racing scene. Got busted one night for street racing.
Uh-oh.
And kind of pretty much decided that the slow and low scene might be better for me at the time.
Uh-huh.
So I got rid of my Mustang and I found this Ranger. It was sitting on a Ford dealership lot. It was an 88 that model year that had, it was 1989 when I bought it. It had been sitting there for a year.
Okay.
They only made like 23 of those trucks. It was a truck that Steve Saleen had built to support his IndyCar dreams. And they brought a few vehicles out and used them as pit vehicles at the Indy race.
Wow.
But they never really produced a lot of them. But me being a Mustang guy and it being a Ford Ranger, it just seemed natural. And then it was the Saleen, so I felt like it was kind of like a cool performance pickup truck.
Yep.
I really wasn't thinking super mini trucker at the time, but things happen. And nine days after I bought it, I crashed it. And
really?
Wrecked it pretty bad. So at that point, I decided, well, I mean, I put it back to stock or I can customize it. So I ended up taking it to Kelly and Sons Crazy Painter, Mitch Kelly in Bellflower, California, and he put it all back together. It had a one-off body kit, a fiberglass body kit from Saleen. They'd gotten rid of the plugs. They didn't have any parts available for them because they had produced so few of them. So I literally had to go back to the crash scene, which was out in Malibu, like a few weeks later,
uh-huh.
And dig through the canyon and pull out pieces of fiberglass to take back to the body shop for them to put the body kit back together.
That's
so
insane.
It was pretty crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, that is cool.
So that truck, much like a lot of the mini trucks back in the day, it got done twice. It was on the cover of Truckin' Magazine in May of 91. And then after I went to work for the magazine, we redid it and Doug Starbuck painted it. It was teal and white and it was on the cover of Auto Sound and Security. And it was at the Consumer Electronics Show in the Pile booth. It was pretty crazy. It was pretty wild. A pretty crazy stereo system back in the day. 812s and in the bed firing into the cab. And
it was really loud.
It was pretty loud for back in the day.
Man, one of the first trucks or the truck that really got me into mini trucking when I was in middle school and I would see it, it was a truck that was like an 88, 89 Mitsu, and it had like all the speakers in it and had the, I think his was a blow through. And I mean, just, gosh, that stuff was cool. And really, like, I'm sure like a lot of teenagers and young adults and stuff, like they saw the trucks like what I'm describing and what you had, and that got them hooked. So it's kind of amazing if you think about the truck that you kind of did once and then obviously, you know, you rebuilt it. A lot of people probably saw that truck and that's what got them hooked. I think that's pretty bad ass.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It makes me feel good to know that people enjoyed it as much as I did, you know?
Yeah, it was a classic. Now tell us, like, what happened to the truck? Did you just, you kind of got to the point where you had to sell it, or was there another story to that?
I ended up selling it to an enthusiast who was a reader of the magazine. And then I lost track of it. And then after I moved out here to Arizona about almost 10 years ago, Ruben had called me up and said, "Hey, I saw your Ranger posted on Craigslist."
No way.
And so we did a little searching, and it had, the listing had expired, but it was kind of torn apart, and it was for sale outside of the Phoenix area. And then I never found out much more. I recently found out that the person who was selling it was a mini truck enthusiast that had intended to putting it back to the way it had originally appeared, but he lost interest ran into some health issues and lost interest and then sold the project. But I don't know where it ended up after that.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's a small world when something pops up on Craigslist, huh, Ruben?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's like, dang, man. Or some people will post these trucks, or, and it's amazing that there was something you had said earlier, and it made me think, like, if you had a time machine, or if you would have been able to think about it, you'd say, man, you know, we got all these extra magazines right here. We'll just store a couple. In 25 years, I'm going to sell them for $100 a piece, right? People would think you're crazy. But the same can be said about builds. I had a good conversation with the homie Vic the other day, and Vic and I were talking about, you know, there's been a couple mini trucks around here. In Florida, Rob Sefter built the first, it was the first severed ties cover truck for mini trucking. And believe it or not, this blows my mind, it was May 2000. So to think that mini trucking had been around for, you know, give or take 15 years before a severed truck was on the cover. But what was interesting is after Rob, you know, unfortunately, you know, he passed away and this truck moved on, some people kind of changed the truck a little bit. And now the guy is kind of changing it back. And if you think about trucks that were very iconic, you almost say, gosh, like right now, the trend is people want almost like Static Drop, I swear, is going to come back soon. But people want that like old school, like me. I'm collecting these old BMX bikes. You know, I want an old bike that's from 88 because it just reminds me of stuff. And that's the way builds almost seem like they're going now.
No, it pretty much has to come back full circle to, you know, because, I mean, everything's been done. I mean, what's next? You know, rockets on the other side and, you know, hovercrafts? Seriously,
well,
you know.
You know, absolutely. Everything comes back around. You know, the trend in automotive in general right now is retro, is, you know, taking something old and, you know, modernizing it to a certain extent, or just taking something old, you know, so... It doesn't surprise me that people are looking to these earlier trucks and wanting to relive that history. It's our history. I mean, we were kids. That's what we drove. I mean, we want something that we can go back in time with. But you also point out a point, you know, about Static Drops and stuff like that. You know, the trucks were simpler back then, and they were certainly more drivable. And that's something that I miss, because it's not something that I see a lot of. I mean, when I was in the scene, big into the scene, nobody had a car trailer and nobody wanted a car trailer.
Right, because, I know.
Because they wanted to drive their truck, because that was the cool thing, you know. You wanted to be seen, you know. So, but, you know, as you get older and people, you know, you spend a lot of money on something, I totally get why people trailer their vehicles.
Yep.
But it's just not something that was done back then. People frowned upon it back in the early days, that's for sure.
Well, Mike, I'll say this too. I built a truck that was, you know, over the top, and it's, you know, people say, oh, it's the, you know, the baddest one built and stuff. That's what other people's opinion. But I look back now and I say, man, I love the truck I built. You know, I didn't do it. Jimmy's Rod and Customs did, but I love the truck. But I, you know, some people say, man, why haven't you even put 1 mile on it? And it's because of, like, to your point, the money. But at the same time, I look back and I say, look at all the times I missed. Like when I first had it before I blew it apart, I used to drive it everywhere body dropped. I loved it. People would see it. I drive it. I had just such a good time. And now that I'm into Lincolns, I just want to drive my Lincoln. You know, I mean, on the weekends, I want to get in and cruise. And you nailed it, man. There's so many of us that saw, like you mentioned earlier with that over at the burger joint. You know, somebody, you saw a ride that went by and you're like, oh man, mom, dad, look, I want this. And that's what got the little kids hooked. And with less and less of that, it's like, man, where does that put us, you know?
Yeah. To me, it's even simpler than that. I call it the look back. I love to walk away from my vehicle and look over my shoulder and say, think to myself, that's my ride, you know?
Yep.
You know what? If you're not doing that, then you got the wrong car.
Yeah, yep, I agree. Much. Well, I took for, you know, I finally got, I've been working on a Lincoln, but I got another Lincoln and, you know, it's one of those things. And my wife and I went for lunch one day and it was really the first day we could get in this car and we did that. And literally I got up and I was trying not to look back at the car and I got right up to the pizza joint we went to and I kind of swung the door open. She walks in and I look back and I'm like, all right, there, you know, everything's good. She's sitting right over there, man. And it is a great feeling, bro. It really is.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely.
So kind of as we, you know, start to wind down a little bit, I did want to kind of ask, you know, we've talked a lot about the history of the magazine and Mike, you know, your contributions to the scene and your truck, but, you know, early mini truckers, you know, especially those and some of the ones you've named, you know, that were tied into the mini trucking magazine, as well as the trucking family, you know, they moved on to other genres. And one person that sticks out, and coincidentally, you've mentioned his name, is like Brian McCormick. You know, I've seen on Instagram, you know, he's been in the Cadillacs and he's kind of into some newer style. I don't think it was, newer style cars, some really cool stuff. But, you've stayed, you know, some of these guys have stayed tied to the automotive scene. But like, have you, Mike, stayed tied a little bit? Or do you kind of, when you moved on, you decided to kind of, you know, get into a different line of business?
Yeah, well, having left Mini Truck and I continued on working for in several different segments of the automotive scene. I worked on Super Street magazine. I was the editor of Eurotuner magazine. I even contributed to Hot Rod magazine during my publishing career. Later, I went on to work for Sir Michael's. I was also the brand manager for AC Schnitzer while working for CEC. I did my fair share of freelance work for just about everyone out there.
Gotcha.
But back in 2003, unfortunately, I was involved in a really bad desert accident out in Glamis. And I got hurt pretty bad. And it was a life-changing experience for me. And it kind of took me away from the scene for quite a while. And then these days now, I take care of my rental property out here in Arizona. I enjoy spending time with my wife, Trina, and kicking it with our cat, Shadow.
Nice.
As for project vehicles and stuff like that, it was after the Hall of Fame induction. I mentioned to Ruben that, I needed to pick up a second vehicle anyhow. The wife and I actually were down to one vehicle for a while to save some money. And then it came a time where we were going to get another second vehicle. And then it was right around the same time as the Hall of Induction and Fame. And I decided, after measuring out the space in my garage, because it's important that I park my vehicle indoors, was I only had a certain amount of feet, and it just worked out perfect that a mini truck would fit. And so I decided to start searching out for a new project, and I called Ruben December of
around December, just started January, something like that.
Yeah, it was December. It was before Christmas. I called Ruben and I said, hey, bud, you want to go to Michigan with me?
Oh, no way.
And he goes, what? And I said, I'm flipping through, and I found an 04 Chevy Blazer, and it's sitting on a dealership lot in Flint, Michigan. And he's all, you're crazy. And I said, yeah, I know, but check it out. I looked up online, and I found a one-way flight on Frontier Airlines, if you've ever flown Frontier.
I know. I have once.
But $29.
Holy crap. So like, my flight wasn't that cheap. That's
so
sick.
$29. I flew back, took a look at the Blazer, purchased it, took 3 days to drive back to Arizona, And it's been about a year, starting to make a little bit of headway. It's been a long time since I've been involved in the scene, so a lot of the people that I knew in the past have moved on, and there's a lot of new faces. But I was able to work with some old friends of mine and putting together some parts to get going on that. Nothing crazy. I like to drive my vehicles. So when you talked about doing a static drop, that's all me.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it comes out. I'm hoping to get my byline in Truckin' Magazine and also on Truckin' Online as well, working with Jeremy Cook. So it should be interesting. There should be some stories coming out. I can't really say when because I'm not the editor anymore.
Sure.
But in the future.
You don't have to worry about that shit, man.
that's
Well, a couple things I'll say is, one, I didn't know of an accident, so I'm you know, thank you for sharing that with us, and I'm happy to see that you've, you know, like you said, you took a break, and, you know, you like my buddy and I, Vic, always talk about everybody deserves to be happy, and it's like, you know, you took a break from what you needed to as far as that, you know, you got back on track, and, you know, it's always interesting to me to find out, you know, where someone lands, because, you know, some of us, like Ruben and I and you, Mike, we're crazy. You know, we've stuck with this automotive thing a long time. You know, how many times over the years have we said, oh, that, you know, heard people say, that's just a fad, that's going to pass, you know, and now it's, you know, we're 40, 50 years old, we're still doing it. So, you know, it's always cool to see what makes people happy, because different things make us all happy. And, you know, it sounds like you've got your own little, you know, little paradise out there in Arizona, and you're getting your hands dirty again with a new little project. So I wish you guys all the luck. Now, you do have to be careful around Ruben. You know, you heard him earlier say he likes to take shit apart, and he's a mini trucker at heart.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't, Ruben, we don't want to end up with a pile of parts. I know, right?
Oh, it's happened already. So,
oh man, I know.
It happened more than once.
Yeah. I was going to say. That's funny. Yeah, you're going to be like, hey, Mike, yes, remember you left the Blazer at my house the other day? Well, we got it torn down to the frame. good times. But, you know, what I wanted to kind of do is, you know, as we kind of wrap it up here is kind of just be like, hey, Ruben, I mean, you know, we talked about some old times, you know, a lot of great times for you guys growing up and kind of getting in the scene. You've shared a lot of kind of personal stories with us, but you know, any other stories that you wanted to mention that kind of came back to mind over this, you know, our interview or so that we just did?
Oh, man, what can I bring up?
I know it's kind of...
about the Opel.
Oh, man, I had 1970 Opel that I worked. Oh, God, man. Mike, I used to work summers with my dad at Quaker State Oil. My dad worked in the laboratory at Quaker State Oil when I was a kid. He retired from there. And my sister and I would work there during the summer, and had a coworker that had this 1970 Opel, and I saved up my money, and of course my parents helped me, and I bought this Opel, and I drove it all throughout high school, rebuilt the engine in, I believe it was like 11th grade in auto shop, and it was just refresh bearings and rings, and the car, it was 1970, this was 86 87, so it wasn't all that great. Well, I was known for that car, and it died on me, I want to say maybe a few months before graduation in 87, and I ended up selling that car for, geez, I want to say like $500 to a guy that worked at the Toyota dealership in Cerritos where I bought my first Toyota truck.
Yep.
Yeah. And my mom actually gave me the money for the down payment. That was my graduation present.
That's crazy, yep. Man. Well, yeah, and but it's funny. I just had to, I had to Google it, I'll be honest. And, you know, at first I was like, okay, I spelled it wrong, but it's O-P-E-L, right? So it's 1970 Opel.
Yes.
And you can do a, you know, Google image search on that, and you'll see a bunch of cool photos. So yeah, there's some little bit of history for you guys. Ruben's pretty mini truck history. I definitely love it.
Yeah, his baby Corvette.
Yeah, poor man's Corvette. And I actually, man, I want to say I fit like six people in that car once. Of course, high school.
We know it was like, you know, 10, man. You know, you're just being modest.
It could have been. It
was a two-seater. Six people in a two-seater is plenty.
I know your wife's gonna listen, and I know what it was like. It was Ruben, and it was like, you know, six or eight girls or something. Nah, just kidding you, man.
9 or 10. Yeah, hell, yeah. Really quick. My 99 Silverado. This was about 8 years ago at SEMA. Mm-hmm. Hell, we fit 9 people in that thing.
Dang, man.
In that Beetle.
How many people did we shove into the Astro van?
Oh shit.
Dude, that
18?
I was gonna say that has to be pushing 20, man.
And that was from Parker all the way around the dam and back to where we were staying on the other side.
Yeah.
That's good stuff, man. Well, you know, Mike, I wanted to kind of sum it up in my opinion that, you know, whether you know it or not, you know, I wasn't into mini trucking until like right out of high school, you know, and I did read Mini Trucking Magazine in middle school and then into high school. But, you know, for like what you did and what, you know, even Ruben, you were tied into the whole scene over there and what, you know, I always talk about the OGs, man, and whether you guys know it or not, you laid the foundation. And, you know, a couple guys before you guys, but mostly what you guys were doing and what you contributed. And I appreciate that because, again, we've really kind of laid down your history and what you did and what you contributed to. And I just want to say thanks, man. I really want to. If you were right here, I'd just shake your hand and say, man, we appreciate what you've done, Mike.
Well, I do appreciate it. You know, there's a time when, as I progressed and moved on from being the editor of Mini Trucking Magazine, where I kind of let go of my past and embrace the future, and to be able to come full circle and to get that recognition and really to come back and say, out of all the publications I worked on and traveling the world and doing some really incredible stuff, the most fun I really had, the most connected I ever felt was being involved in the mini truck scene and being editor of the magazine during those late 80s, early 90s was incredible.
Well, dude, I mean, that's a mic drop right there. And, you know, I'll kind of, you know, sum it up with one more thing is, you know, a lot of guys came before us, and we definitely have to recognize that history, and that's what we do. One more important thing, Mike, and Ruben, you know this, is with the podcast, it gives us an opportunity to bring some of these stories to light or maybe bring a name that's back from, you know, the old school days. And that's what I love doing. And, you know, even me as a young guy, you know, as a young child, I would have never thought that I could sync up and meet the people that I have through the mini truck scene. And it's because I flew to shows and met a lot of guys and slapped hands with people. And it's like, look, I've got Ballistic on my wall here and it's framed. And, you know, the homie Pat, he signed it. And, you know, I think back, I looked at the cover the other day and I was like, that's January of 1993, 25 years ago. Like, if you would have told me all those years ago that I'm going to meet this guy that built this truck and then it's going to be signed, I'd be like, it's crazy. But that's what the mini truck scene does. It really does bring us together, guys.
It sure does.
Yeah, it definitely does. And who shot, you know what, because I haven't opened this magazine in a long time, does anyone remember who shot that cover?
Which cover?
For Pat Nichols, the Toyota with the no hood on it.
That was you, Mike, wasn't it?
Courtney and I.
That's what I thought. I thought it was. I thought you were tied into that. So that's pretty cool. That one's hanging right here in the man cave, man.
Yeah. It was Courtney and I. It was my camera equipment and Courtney's fat ass laying on his stomach in the driveway shooting the photo.
Now, whose house was that? Do you remember? Was that like where Pat was living, like his parents or something? I don't know. I'm just asking.
Dude, this is a great story.
Okay. See, I was going to get it out. I knew it.
It's a good story.
Well, you've met Pat, and he's a very interesting character. So I show up to his house. He's living in Laguna Niguel with his parents, you know, at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I explained to him the cover concept of doing, like, a car wash cover and stuff like that. And I asked him, I say, hey, you know, do you have a friend? Or, you know, we just need to shoot it in the driveway, but the lighting wasn't right for his house. So he says, yeah, I know a driver we can use. So we cruise like around the block. We're in this upscale Laguna Niguel down by the coast and the beach neighborhood. So we set up, put his truck in the driveway, lay it out. We got the model there doing the shoot and everything else. And so we're probably there for like 30, 40 minutes or so. And then we finish up and I'm like, I'm like, hey, Pat, so whose house is this anyhow? And he goes, I don't know whose house it is.
That is awesome, man. I've always wondered that because, you know, if you look back at a lot of the covers that Brian McCormick shot, like for Street Trucks, there were a lot of badass shots where there's like a three-car garage, the trucks lay down in front of it, and it just was like a great, you know, non-crazy backdrop. It really made for a great backdrop, man.
Yeah, so, that was a cool cover.
So good stuff. But
thanks, Pat, for the location.
Yep, thanks, Pat.
That's good stuff. Well, here's one. The last thing I was going to kind of share is I was looking because I'm an Instagram junkie, and I was trying to see if Mike maybe had signed up for Instagram. But if you look up his name, I've hashtagged him. It looks like 17 times. And it's Mike, and then it's S-H-A-R-T-S-I-S. And there's 17 public posts as of right now. And one of them, I'll reshare the photo, is Truck and Mag. It was August of 92. Mike was leaned up against the Ford Ranger. He has the sunglasses on. The arms are crossed. You know, looking like a true OG, man.
So. Yeah, that was from a shoot that we did that was like introducing the staff. It was a staff photo that we did. So we all had pictures in front of our vehicles. I remember the photo, but that's not me on Instagram.
Oh, you know what? It's funny because when I looked at that photo, I was like, I don't know that when I met you, I was like, you've changed. But so that isn't you.
Well, it's not my Instagram account.
Oh,
there is a picture of me standing in front of my Ranger, and I'm not sure if that's the photo that you're referencing, but it sounds familiar.
Oh, yeah, and you know what? It was the photo that I had posted on the podcast page. So, yep. Okay, yeah. So when I had first seen that, I was like, you know, I wonder if that is Mike. And I assume that it was because it was your truck. So, yeah, I'll have to make sure you see that one, you know, bring back some memories.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff. Mike, before I ask Ruben, was there anything else that you wanted to share, man?
Not off the top of my head. All I can say is thank you for having me on and thank the listeners for taking the time to join us on this adventure into our past.
Hells yeah, man. I appreciate your candor, as I always tell the guests, but I mean, you know, gave us a lot of good insight, and we love telling that story on Our Lifestyle, the podcast. Now, Ruben, any last parting words for the Airhead Nation, man?
No, thanks for having me on again. It was a blast. I enjoyed it. I always enjoy being a part of this. And thank you. Thanks for the opportunity again, Jason.
Oh, and I hope I get to see everybody out at Forbidden Fantasy.
Yes.
Yes.
Jason, are you coming out?
I'm not going to be there, but Mike will. And the reason I have a good reason, I'm going on. My wife booked a trip, a cruise for our, not that kind of cruise, but like a real ship cruise. She booked a cruise for our 10th wedding anniversary. And I swear it was about a year ago. She goes, hey, I'm going to go ahead and book a cruise. And I'm half listening and going, yeah, no problem. And then she books it. And I go, wait a minute. No, not that weekend. She's like, too late. Well, so it's Forbidden Fantasy. I didn't get to go last year. But then last year I went to St. Augustine and they had that big BMX, like, you know, people come from all over the U.S. thing. So that was kind of cool. But I'm going to make Forbidden next year. And Mike, you know, since I won't get to see you there this year, you know, we'll definitely sync up. Next time I'm in Arizona,
of course.
I'm going to look you up, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
Get some dinner.
And congratulations, by the way, on the anniversary.
Yeah, congratulations on keeping the wife happy.
Thanks,
yes,
man. I
very
know.
Very important.
Early on, it was mini trucking, and now she's going, okay, you're going to sell the mini truck because you got a Lincoln now. I'm like, I know. But
hey, you know, I got to say, man, props on picking the most hardest car to restore.
I know, you know, man. It's no easy task, and I always tell myself, why didn't I get a 63 Chevy? That's no slight against, you know, my homies out there. Because I know Ernie Macias, you know, he's had a big uphill battle with the one that he got. But, you know, it looks great. And at the end of the day, man, it does suck. But the good thing is there's suppliers like Jeff at Devious Customs and, you know, other guys out there that are finally starting to make, you know, things, control arms and stuff. Because it makes life a lot easier. You know, when you have some vendors you can pick up and call. So
Yeah, they're exactly. Just, but, yeah, that is odd. That's a great car, though.
They're great, awesome cars when they're all gone through, but man, they are complicated.
Well, one of my dreams is, you know, you guys said it earlier, PCH, Pacific Coast Highway. I want to drive down that, and I guess even if it's a damn rental, you know, because hell no, I'm probably not going to drive out there, but, you know, I want to drive down that road one day and just, you know, think of my dad and you know, tip the new era fitted cap to him, you know, because that was my world. And, you know, it's been, next month is 6 months since he's been gone. And you guys know how it is when you lose someone close. It's, you know, you think about him all the time. And, you know, this podcast kind of is a way for me to, you know, share some of the childhood memories that I had of magazines and music and Jordans and whatever cool shit I like. And, you know, there's people like you that just took an hour, little over an hour, you know, of your time. And I appreciate that, guys.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks again for having me on. I really do appreciate it.
Yep. No problem, Mike. And if you ever sign up for Instagram, we're going to tag the hell out of you, man. You're going to be like, stop. But, but in all seriousness, yo, we appreciate you guys, DLC, and we'll talk soon. We out here.
This is a Law House experience. So you know it's gonna be some mega shit. So who is that?
KMG will never be a trick. Step up to the mic like a baller, then I'll pimp this gift. And only I possess. I illustrated that way to get the shit on my chest. A ghetto rage to amaze the crowd. It's quite simple. KMG has degrees from UT of South Central. I'm a graduate. And it's all legit. From the pimping and balling and all that good shit. I have the mega thoughts in which I speak in a slang. While I'm kicking it with the G's from the Ruthless Gang. Ain't nothing changed but the weather like I said before. Cause I'm living like hustlers and I'm checking galore. Yo, I have to give it up to the DOC. A ruthless brother that's down with the KMG. So all hell to the niggas that's turning it out. And maybe then I'll take the gun barrel out of your mouth. Out of your mouth.
Knowledge from one generation to another. Preserved and then transmitted. Get it? Done the ruthless way, you know what I'm saying? So what's up, Dre?
No, I'm a swinger. I'm not a motherfucking singer, but I bring a melody that always seems to ring a bell as well as make it so you can tell. Yo, it's coming from Compton where the ballers dwell. Cause I'm Dre, the motherfucking doctor causing propaganda. When I'm on the mic, I demand a little bit of time to express myself. I'm CD and wax, kicking the facts, and it's like that. A nigga with a motherfucking attitude. You know the deal, kicking some real shit. And if a sucker ever thinks he can get some, yo, step off. I'm kicking lyrics for the deaf and the dumb at any occasion. Hitting the bitches with a mega persuasion. Then my dick starts to make an invasion. But yo, I can't go on because this is the end of my part of the last song.
Real cheap from the streets, villainous when he speaks. For all you busters who can't deal, give it up the real.
Now when you see me, you're ducking and slipping, yo, then you fell down. You fucked up and finally figured who runs the sale down. Pulling the pool, squashing the bull. The weak motherfuckers were smelling like shit, so I guess that they're full of it. And I love it when I dress like a crook with a I don't give a fuck look. The villain was something up like a hero, jacking all the niggas with beef. I'm for relief, I mean the zeros. The rest of the 100% was sent to do what I say. In WA and ATL and we don't play. The doc is doing it oh so correctly. See, I broke it down for the ones who tried to check me. But I can't be checked cause I'm the checker. When you see a nigga wreck, believe that I'm the wrecker. The right is for the fight and the left will attend when doing wrong. MC Ren is on the last song.
I'm a genius to temporary insanity. A gangster's dream, a bitch's fantasy. Ruthless. So now, we've come to the payoff.
One motherfucking, two motherfucking, three. It's the hip-hop thugs to Eazy-E. So I grab the mic and then I clear my throat. First nigga kicking lyrics in a straight coat. It's easy for me to come off like this. So you can kiss my ass with a sun rays miss. Or just give me the pussy, then I'll be straight. And if you don't fuck it, I'll masturbate.
We wanna fuck you, Eazy.
Yeah, you bitches scream. Now bow down and praise the Lord for the wingding. I got skill to deal and run game on bitches. You can tell that I'm sick by the 666s. I hear voices in my head for what reason. But when the talking stops, it's drop by season. So back the fuck off and give me respect. Now they're shipping me off cause Eazy played with a half deck.
Criminal in his thoughts, murderous in his lyrics. The notorious Cole.
187, you know I gotta have it. That being above the law is an everyday habit. If you think I drop some pimp shit, I ain't. Perhaps I say a couple rhymes to make the bitches faint. Now everybody wants to chill, heal, and feel. Now what the fuck is the deal? You need a nigga like me to get the shit going. 187 has got the ultimate flow. Now it's time for me to go off like a maniac. Run up for cover cause I'm only a tin snack. An untouchable player rolled up in the one mind. 87 reasons why fools staying in line. Cause I ain't the average nigga behind the trigger. I lay and spray anything in my way. Cause I'm a boss player from the streets of South Central. Believe what
but soon you'll eventually see the ATL is straight to Mega. Don't be surprised because we played you like Sega, and as bodies keep dropping, you see me keep moving on. Peace, somebody here, because this is the last song.
From the house, law house that is, all graduates from USC. For those that don't know, it's the University of South Central.
Yeah, you know that shit, Law. Yo, this is Dr. Dre. Ruthless Records in full motherfucking effect. Dropping shit that's gonna hit 9.2 on the Richter scale, boy.
And yeah, this is cool. One of these seven in the place. ATL definitely ranched y'all. Y'all bought it, so y'all caught it.
A dose of the Mega Flex. Yo, right about now, we want to give a shout out to everybody to help put this motherfucking project together.
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout out to my homie KMG. Yo, DJ Total Chaos, Go Mac with the sack, and Laidlaw.
You know that. I want to give a shout out to my homie MC Ren, Eazy-E the Hip Hop Thugster, my homie DJ Yella, the DOC of Miss LA.
Yo, shots goes out to Donovan, Mike Holmes, Stan, Mike Sims, L.A. Dre, you know, and to Jerry.
And you know that. Ranching.
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 Oh, yeah.
Definitely got to give a shout-out to Epic Records and Kenny Commissar.
Greenspan.